Hey, everybody. Welcome to another show. We've got a special show today. So we're kind of doing a special welcome at the beginning. It's kind of been a Valentine's tradition around here that instead of our normal radio show, we do some read alouds and some story behinds of some Pete's unsent love letters. So that's what we're going to do today. You know, some of these may be ones I read before. Probably they've been altered since the last time you heard them or saw them. Some of them will be the same as you saw them, but hopefully the reading out loud will give you something extra. So if you're a big fan of that already, welcome, and I hope that me reading them lives up to your expectations from you reading them. If this is a new show, if you don't usually listen to this show, enjoy. Thanks for coming out. If you do normally listen to show, this is one of those, you know, very special episode type of episodes. So if you don't dig those, that's cool. I get it. And this one probably isn't going to be your favorite. But, you know, I'm going to try and keep it good. Try and not get too maudlin. We're going to try and have some fun, too. You know, our first letter up here is about Batman's utility belt. So I think that's going to be okay. I did want to just take a minute. You know, it's Valentine's. That's kind of what we celebrate with this whole thing. So welcome. I just wanted to welcome everybody to this. You know, so if you've been married for 25 years and you're happy as flock, you know, welcome. This is for you. And if you're alone and terribly sad and lonely, this is for you. And if you're alone and you're happy about it, this is for you. You know, it's for everybody. You know, the bar is real low. The bar to entry here is real low today. So just enjoy it. You know, enjoy it however you want to enjoy it. Take it for what it's worth to you. And, you know, thanks. Thanks to everyone who supports the whole thing or is starting right now. Couldn't do it without you. I know that's cliche, but that's fucking true. And thanks because, you know, I kind of... This is also horribly terrible. I'm not good at this. But I kind of consider you guys my Valentines. You know, I don't have a Valentine this year. But if you're listening to this, whether you're listening to it on Valentine's Day, nearby yourself maybe, or if you're listening to this before Valentine's Day to get your hate machine rolling so you can hate Valentine's Day, or, you know, it's months and weeks later, you know, happy Valentine's Day. You know, and I consider you my Valentines. This is our holiday. Let's make what we want out of it, right? Take it back. It's for us. This is for you. Welcome. And we'll get started with the letters here in just a little bit. Hey everyone, welcome back. It's been a whole 30 seconds. So we're going to go through some letters. Before we get started though, in earnest, I wanted to do a little something different. So when poets and other authors read, it's kind of a tradition that some follow to read something by somebody else first. I have my different theories on why this is done. You know, I think the clear, obvious one is out of respect for somebody else, you know, and kind of show, all right, I don't think I'm awesome. I know that there's someone very awesome, and I'm just kind of trying to, you know, clutch at their ankles of awesomeness and go along for the ride, you know, ride their coattails. Part of me also thinks maybe it's, you know, if I'm a poet and I go up and read something, I could start off with and something that's, you know, great. And then if the audience hates it, I can say, oh, fuck. Well, if they don't like Billy Collins, I'm screwed. Everybody likes Billy Collins. Nobody likes me. And these guys don't like Billy Collins, I'm screwed. you know, just to be prepared. Kind of like they have the warm-up guy at Leno, goes out and tells some jokes before Leno goes on stage. You know, you have Billy Collins be your sort of unwitting warm-up guy, whether he likes it or not. So I did want to read something by someone else to just touch things off, get used to reading a little bit. Also, you know, this isn't because I consider myself a master poet or, you know, writer or anything. I just feel like maybe y'all would enjoy it too. So I'm going to read two poems. They're short. And I know a lot of people don't like poetry. So I get that. This, you know, I'll read it out loud. Don't worry. There's crazy line breaks and stuff. I got it covered. So you just relax. I'm going to do the lifting and read a poem. I'm going to read two poems. The first one is called Dim, and it's by Jim Daniels. And I picked this one just because, you know, I remember reading it for the first time when I was, I don't know, it was probably 10 years ago. And, you know, it just almost every time gets me bawling or right on the edge of it. It's perfect. So I thought I'd read that one just to sort of power through this. And, you know, I don't know if things are going to get emotional today or not, but just in case, we'll all be ready. You know, we'll have said, all right, well, we started Weepy McWeeper Pants over there, started early. So it's cool. The second one is a poem by Denver Butson. And that's, the first poem I ever memorized. We had to memorize poems for class, and you know, you're supposed to memorize a short one and then slightly longer, and it just kind of goes up from there. And I started with this one, even though it was way longer. Not because I don't consider myself a good student. God knows. You know, God knows a lot of those needs to apply himself in class kind of things were, you know, happening for me. But I wanted to read that one, and the reason I memorized that one is because I know myself well enough. My memory is so poor that unless I was really interested in something, there was no way I was going to memorize it. So while I could have memorized something a lot shorter, this one just caught my interest, and I thought, all right, I could probably memorize this. So I laminated it and hung it in the shower. And I would read it in the shower, and that's kind of how I memorized it. So let's just start right off. Hang on just one second. I had to close a drawer because I, you know, have problems. This is Dim by Jim Daniels. Today my son realized someone smarter than him, not me or his mom. He still thinks we know everything. One of the other kids, Nathan, made fun of him at the computer for screwing up at the math game. Other kids laughed. Second grade. I'm never going to be as smart as him, he says. I'm never going to be as smart as half my students if we're talking IQs. But he doesn't want me to explain. He wants me to acknowledge that he's dumb. He's lying in bed and taking his glasses off and on, trying to get them perfectly clean for the morning. I'm looking around his dark room for a joke or some decent words to lay on him. His eyes glassy with almost tears. The world wants to call on him. I take his hand in mine. So that's Tim. You know, it's hard. One of my teachers taught poetry and said one of the things that poets do a lot is when they read, you know, they have these powerful ending lines, but they kind of, their voices lift at the end and get airy. And sometimes you miss those, you know, perfect endings there. So I try not to do that, but it's hard on that one for me. it kills me. This is Tuesday 9 a.m., the one I memorized by Denver Butson. And I wanted to read this one because I feel like it's a... I'm going to read it and then we'll talk about it. A man standing at the bus stop reading the newspaper is on fire. Flames are peeking out from beneath his collar and cuffs. His shoes have begun to melt. The woman next to him wants to mention it to him that he's burning, but she's drowning. Water is everywhere, in her mouth and ears, in her eyes. A stream of water runs steadily from her blouse. Another woman stands at the bus stop freezing to death. She tries to stand near the man who is on fire to try and melt the icicles that have formed on her eyelashes and on her nostrils, to stop her teeth long enough from chattering to say something to the woman who's drowning. But the woman who is freezing to death has trouble moving with blocks of ice on her feet. It takes the three some time to board the bus, what with the flames and water and ice. But when they finally climb the stairs and take their seats, the driver doesn't even notice that none of them is paid, because he's tortured by visions and is wondering if the man who got off at the last stop was really being mauled to death by wild dogs. So, you know, hey, poetry is alive. It's everything. I guess I always interpreted that one as, you know, everybody, the simple distillation of everybody's got their demons, right? You know, and he just kind of creates this surreal thing where people's, if you could see how tortured people were sometimes on the surface, you know, manifested in these weird ways. So, you know, that's kind of a guiding principle, I guess, for the things I've been working on. And I really do think that, you know, I think that people, everyone's got their troubles and their foibles and their things they got to get over. So, I don't know. That was just formative for me. So without further ado, let's get started. So this is one that's a two-parter, a rare two-parter. And we'll just start with part one right away. Dear Ponderer, you can have one of these two things. Thing A, Batman's utility belt and all the stuff in it. Along with this, you get to use everything in there without getting in trouble. So you could throw a batarang at someone's head or shoot off a smoke bomb at the movies and you won't get in trouble. Thing B, you can have the Batmobile, same deal. You can speed, bash other cars off the road, use a grappling hook to help you go around tight corners, whatever. Whatever you answer, I'll still love you. Best, Pete. Part 2. Dear Ponderer, did you decide? Listeners, did you decide? Think about it for a second. I can tell you what the right answer is. The right answer is to take the Batmobile, because think of how useful that would be. You could drive 90 miles per hour wherever you wanted to go. It's the right answer, but I would pick the utility belt. First thing, I would be late all the time, even if I had the Batmobile. I could get to work in 1 minute, which means I would leave 3 minutes after I was supposed to be there. And that would be embarrassing. I would be really embarrassed, because I'd still be late, even in the Batmobile, with no laws. The other thing is, the Batmobile would be way more useful, but the utility belt would be way more fun. Think of all the fun stuff you could do with smoke bombs or a grappling hook gun. I mean, I would probably end up gassing myself with knockout gas a couple of times in my apartment, just looking through the damn thing. But the stuff you could do with it would be 100 times more fun. I think you probably picked Batmobile. You seem like someone who picks things because they're the right choice. I was right that I would still love you no matter which one you picked, though. And thanks for picking and not just saying that it was a stupid question. I know it's a stupid question. Sometimes I want to come up with fun stuff to talk about, so you might think talking to me is fun. Best, Pete. We'll just go into the next one here. Dear Lucky, the first time I stayed at your place, I didn't think I was going to stay at your place. I thought I would stop by, then head home. It didn't happen that way, though, which was good. The bad part was I parked in a place where they give parking tickets. That neighborhood was the one where people said, don't park there. You won't get away with it. You might as well just spend the ticket money on a cab. I thought about moving my car. For the first couple hours I was there, I thought about it. In the morning, there was just a little snow settled over the ground. Nothing serious. Nothing that would slow you down getting to work or anything. But enough that it covered my windshield and everyone's windshield, so no one could look for the stickers that let you park in that neighborhood. It turned out okay. Better than okay. I stayed, I didn't get a ticket. I really liked the snow. What didn't work out is I didn't learn anything. Instead of telling you when I was worried about something else going on, about moving my car, I didn't say anything. It worked itself out. Some stuff, though, some stuff doesn't work itself out. The night doesn't always have a few inches of snow for me, waiting to cover my mistakes. Best, Pete. That one is, you know, that pretty much all of that really happened. It's one of those stories that's kind of hard to tell because it just seems so magically cheesy, right? I mean, doesn't that seem silly? Like, oh yeah, I just happened to stay over and do this, and then there, you know, I saved my ass. You know, and I, if I had the ticket, I guess I would have the ticket. No big thing, but I don't know. You know, when you talk about that meant to be shit, I feel, you know, I don't know. I'm glad that stuff happens sometimes. That's all, I guess. This one's for my brothers. You know, I don't know. I know Ian listens. I don't know if Alan listens, but this one's for you guys. Dear brothers in arms, the other day I pulled out an old video game. It took only part of one level before my eyes filled up with tears. I couldn't figure out what was going on until I closed my eyes and heard the music. Then I turned it up really loud. It wasn't the prettiest music ever. It was an old game. The one where two guys have guns and fight aliens. The one we played all the time when we were kids. But hearing those sounds, I could remember those times when we played together. I remember what it felt like anyway. The three of us sitting around the TV fighting those things off. We were just kids, but that was okay because it felt like we could do anything. If we could fight off a whole invasion of alien robots while we were sitting on the peach basement carpet, what could beat us? It felt like maybe, no matter what else happened, we would be okay. All we would need is each other, and maybe some bandanas. I didn't know what we'd be fighting off when we got older, but I was ready to fight anything. I just didn't think we'd be all fighting so far apart. Best, Pete. Yeah, that's, I can tell you, you know, growing up, me and my brothers, I mean, we were Nintendo kids, man. Every game we got, you know, my older brother would play it, then I'd play it, then my little brother would play it. And it was so weird, you know, because it sounds like, you know, terrible, right? You'd probably think, oh, kids should be outside, kids should be playing, but man, though, I have the best memories from that, you know. And I remember watching my brothers play, and it was like, you know, so much about the way they played Nintendo was like the way they grew up, I think. You know, my older brother, he was always methodical, and he drove me fucking nuts sometimes because he would go, you know, if a game, if you're collecting coins and the coins have no real purpose, he would go back and get coins that he missed. And I would seriously sit there and like slap the floor and be like, God damn it, will you keep going? You know, he would beat a boss and then he's at the end of the level and it's something I couldn't beat. By the way, I'm terrible at video games, I've recently discovered. But, you know, he would, instead of going straight out the exit, he'd collect all the goddamn worthless coins and I would just be going fucking nuts. Thinking like, ah, oh, you're wasting your time. My little brother, I remember him playing and just thinking he was so smart and he could pick things up so fast. You know, he could see something happen one time and then he could replicate it 1,000 times. And he just, I don't know, so smart. And then there's me, of course, who just played like a complete fucking moron. Just, you know, sprinting through everything. No patience whatsoever. So, you know, you've got Mr. Methodical and wise and saving for a rainy day. You've got a guy with just, you know, the smarts. And I don't, you know, I don't want to take away anything that he's done. I just think he's very naturally talented too, though. I know he's hardworking as well, but man, you know, you've got smart, naturally talented guy and then you got fucking Bozo running through, dying immediately. I probably had the shortest turns, I'm guessing. You know, if I lost all my lives, I mean, that did not last long for me. I have the music loaded up here. You know, it kind of happened a little different than the way it does in the story. I wasn't actually playing the game. It was too hard to explain in the story there. But what was going on was, I was in my car, my iPod was out of battery. And so I was just like, what am I going to listen to? And my phone was pretty new. I had an app on there that had Nintendo music that I've used on other shows here. So I was like, all right, I'll just go through some of this Nintendo music and see if maybe something's good for the shows or whatever. And then this just came on. Now, I know it sounds like real cheesy, right? You know, but in the car, it sounded so much different. Because in real life, it kind of sounded like this. And then in the car, it kind of sounded like this. You know, it was a real much richer sound. Because turns out car speakers are better than Zenith TV shit speakers. So I was in the car and this just comes on and it was night, it was very cold and I was driving and I just remember my eyes were just filling up with tears, you know, I don't know why. It just hit me in the memory spot of the brain, you know. We're barely into this show and I've already just talked about basically me crying like 10 times. So for those of you who thought I was highly manly, be disappointed. All right, let's move right on. I don't know if this one's gone up yet. You know, it's pretty specific. Sometimes I try and not put ones up that I feel like the people who know, that if everyone can sort of identify who they're about, I don't know. But here we go. Dear Badger, thanks for barking and demanding pets when your owner got the door. It was good to have something else to look at when she opened the door. She's so pretty. It was just a door there. Then it was her, and I wanted to kiss her and talk and cook with her and sleep next to her. All of that at the same time. All the way melted. Petting you was when I could pull myself back into man shape. Best, Pete. I was just telling somebody the other day about that dog, the corgi, and he was, you know, he was real particular. I liked, he had such a personality. I know everyone says this about their dog, but here are the two things that were really great about him. I mean, there was more than two, but my two favorites. Number one is, you know, so being a corgi, when you take him out in public, everyone's like, oh my God, corgi, and they want to go up to him and give him attention. And he's a nice dog. He didn't bark at anybody. He just completely fucking ignored anybody except his owner. I mean, anybody. You know, he would just like literally look the other direction if people came up to pet him. He'd turn his body around and just pretend to be so not interested. I mean, I think he legitimately hurt people's feelings. I don't know why he did that. He certainly wasn't trained to do that. That was just his prerogative, you know? His other thing, so he was real particular about, he would lay on the bed, you know, kind of at the foot of the bed, but he did not like if there was movement under the covers. So like if you moved your foot under the cover and it does that little, like, you know, Bugs Bunny under the grass hump moving along, he would like growl and just go sleep on the floor. He fucking hated that. He wanted everyone get in the bed, do not move. However, in the morning, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he would go out, he would pee, he'd come back. Then that was spoon time. I spooned that dog many a morning. It was quite enjoyable. For some reason in the morning, he was like, that's when he was in, man. He wanted to sleep human style, little spoon, under the covers, head on the pillow. Yeah, that's, you know, one thing of many that I miss. Dear Bride, at some point in your life, you go to a lot of weddings. I don't know if it's because people all get married at the same age or if maybe it's a domino thing where one person gets married and that puts the idea in someone else's head and pretty soon everyone is getting married. Weddings must be special for the people in them. But I'm embarrassed because when I remember a wedding, I can't remember which one I'm thinking about. They all mush together. We all sit down. I look at how everyone's dressed, not because the clothes are much for me, but there's always an uncle or someone who looks like he was out working in his yard and then hopped straight in his car to come to the wedding. I look around in my suit pockets. I try to leave something in there from the last time I wore it so there's something to find, even if it's just a sugar packet. Then I kind of run out of stuff to do. It's hard to come up with things to think about when you're sitting at a wedding and you're by yourself. You can't bring anything with you, so you're just sitting there listening to people say really private stuff to each other. Or not, which is worse. It makes me sad all the time. Every time they start saying things to each other, it all kind of sounds the same. And they use the word soul too much. And then a photographer runs in and takes a picture of something that I would think you would remember. Then I check my other suit pockets and hope there's something there. Please, just a beer lid. Anything. Best, Pete. Yeah, weddings are tough. You know, that soul thing comes from that same poetry teacher, Lisa. She taught me a lot of things, you know. I know that sometimes the things that I write and do, I don't do right by her. But, you know, she's one of those people who's a really great teacher for me, and I hope to make proud someday, you know? And she had this rule that you couldn't use the word soul for, you know, the first 6 weeks or whatever, which I didn't really have a strong opinion on at the time, and now I very much get it. Okay, here we go. Dear Sounding Board, one time I asked a woman I was seeing what I'm like drunk. I was kind of drunk when I asked. She laughed when I asked her. She said, "You talk more, and you smile." Then she held my ears in her hands and kissed me right under my left eye and then right under my right eye. Her special kiss for me that meant my mouth tasted like warm liquor. Those were okay things, smiling and talking. Drunk me sounded all right. He had his own special kiss. Best, Pete. I did do that once. I actually said, you know, what am I like when I'm drunk? Because I didn't really know. That's what she said. You talk more and you smile more. You're happier. This is not a good thing to hear about being drunk. I mean, I don't think so. I don't know. Dear Apollo, I would like very much to visit the moon. There are lots of nice places here, don't get me wrong. It's hard to tell if the moon will be pretty when you're standing on it. It might be ugly, but I'd still like to try. One time I went to the desert, and it was really pretty. And then when I got back, I told you about it. But the words weren't any good. I couldn't say how it looked so you could feel like we saw the same thing. All the stuff I could think to say, it didn't make it so all the dirt and the wrinkled rocks were pretty. All the stuff I could think to say, it didn't make you close your eyes and be there with me. The long line of foam poles swooping out of nowhere. How the sun squinted into a long line when it dipped down. If I went to the moon, I could point. It would be there like always. Even better than the sun, because it doesn't mind if you look right at it. When I pointed and told you about the moon, you would understand. The best part of a moon trip would be that I wouldn't have to worry about the right words to tell you. When I go anywhere else pretty, it's all I think about. Best, Pete. This next one's another one of those ones that's, you know, very obviously for a person. So happy Valentine's Day. Dear pal, the nickname started out easy. It was just chopping off the end of your name. Then more nicknames. Valentine was an easy one. Then Palatine, like the suburb in Chicago. Then Palestine. Then Clementine. Each name made new names. Valenstein, Palindrome, Valadrome. You'd leave a name alone in a room. Then there were three more when you came back. Valari, Van Gogh, Valngo. I couldn't stop, Valencia. A really smart man said something to me. He said if you use the perfect word for something, that's it. You find the perfect word and you don't have to think about it anymore, Valpak. He said that when you find the perfect word for something, you can't get away from it. It's in the box with the label on it, and then it's done. I wasn't ready to be done thinking about you, to say your name the last in the right way. best, Pete.
They're waking you up to close the bar. Streets wet, you can tell by the sound of the car. Bartenders singing Clementine. While he's turning around the open sign. Dreadful, sorry. Time. Though you're still her man.
Dear Toasted, whenever someone holds up a glass, there's time to think about a wish. Not much time, but that's okay. I always know what I'm asking for. It's always the same. Every time someone lifts a champagne flute or an uncapped bottle or a highball glass, every time. Nobody ever says it out loud. Nobody says the thing that I'm wishing for, not even me. I go along with whatever they say. Just behind my lips, that's the living place for what I'm asking after. I took some toasts away from people when I shouldn't have. Weddings. When a guy I know was leaving and we were holding up liquor so his plane wouldn't crash. I did it one time when we were toasting my friend's dead father. Even that one I couldn't give away. Don't tell them. I'm only telling you this. If you don't come back home. I don't really care if other people get divorced or crash planes. If you don't come back, all the fathers are gonna die anyway. I need this. Need a reason to pick up a glass. When I wish, I get just the littlest time. From the time after the wish until the time liquor touches my lips. That's the only time I let myself miss you. When I let myself want you to come up next to me and hook your arm in my arm while we're drinking next to each other. When I could have the only thing I want, and then I could start wanting things for other people again. Best, Pete.
Dreadful sorry. Clementine. Dreadful sorry.
Dear Rowdy, pro wrestling is fake. I know that. What I didn't know before is how it got fake. It used to be that wrestling was all real, way, way back. Later on was when it got fake. What happened is that wrestling was real and people came to watch it. But then the wrestlers were worried that the wrestling matches were too complicated, no fun to watch anymore. They were so good at wrestling that only other wrestlers could watch it. They started doing two matches. At the first match, the guys really wrestled. They would do all the things they know to do without worrying about if it was boring to someone watching. They just wrestled. Underhook, crossbody ride, flying mare. One guy would win, and then they would wrestle the second match. This time a crowd. The wrestlers, they went more showy. The guy who won the first match always won the crowd match too. Like a prize. Wrestlers got to see who was better. People got a show. The one thing, it would feel terrible to lose the first match and then know you had to lose again. The same rear naked choke, the same cradle, in front of everyone, same spiral ride. Because it's not real until everyone knows about it. You lose something, but it's not real. You have to lose it over and over in front of everyone before it's real. Best, Pete. This is a new one. Yeah, I just moved out of my apartment. So this is a new one. By the way, the word Cassiopeia is very difficult to spell. Dear Cassiopeia, try it. Spell it in your head. Cassiopeia. It is C-A-S-S-I-O-P-E-I-A. Cassiopeia. You like how I did that spelling bee style? Dear Cassiopeia, last weekend I moved to a new apartment. Everything had to go. 8 years of everything. Someone came to pick up the old couch, the books, and the boards the books sat on, and the bricks the boards sat on. The microwave. The hardest thing to get rid of was the stars. Remember the stars? The ones that glowed in the dark? The ones we put up in my bedroom, the first bedroom that wasn't my bedroom from home. We opened the plastic package. I started trying to make Orion from the way I remembered him in the real sky. You put up constellations of your own. We both tried to figure out what to do with the glow-and-dark footprints that came in the package. And you stuck one up on the wall near the light switch at the other end of the room so I could find it if I woke up at night in my new bedroom, the one that wasn't my bedroom from home. When I pulled them down last weekend, that's when I remembered putting them up. How they were near the spot on my desk where I stood with one foot on the desktop, one on a rolling chair. How most of the other ones were around the same spot. The space above the bed where we could both stand and reach the ceiling. I moved last weekend. I got rid of a mirror and pictures of fruit that were hanging in the kitchen. I cleaned the bathtub one last time. Then I pulled down our whole sky. Best, Pete. This is one that a lot of people sort of responded to that I was kind of surprised about, I guess. It's about comic books. You know, I have a passion for comic books. Quite a, you know, I don't know. I get real involved in them. I just read a real good Spider-Man comic the other day. Actually, it was very sad. You know, they retell the origins a lot in comics, right? So when I see they're retelling the origins, I say, oh, shit. So, you know, Peter Parker, right? For those of you who don't know, here's what happens. So Peter Parker gets bit by a spider and becomes Spider-Man. He's got Spider-Man powers. This is not the origin of Spider-Man, however. What happens is he decides to use his powers to become a pro wrestler. So he's pro wrestling, making some money. And a guy robs the office, the pro wrestling place, you know, takes all the cash and goes running away. And Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is just standing in the hallway, lets the guy run right past him, this criminal, right? And, you know, the guy's like, what the hell, man? You're a crazy, powerful wrestler. You could have stopped that guy. And he says, that's not my problem. And, of course, this guy, you know, is on the loose and happens to, in his attempt to escape, shoot Peter's Uncle Ben, who's basically been his father. You know, his parents died. He's raised by his aunt and his uncle. You know, and then he discovers his uncle's been shot. He goes running after the criminal. He catches him and finds out that it was the guy he could have stopped. So for the rest of his life, you know, he's basically tortured by the idea that, you know, if he had just not fucked up that one time, he could have fixed everything. And it's very, you know, it's a tragic thing, and it seems melodramatic, you know, obviously. But so I was reading this comic book, right? And it really brought it home for me. So it had a scene where it was, you know, a flashback to the funeral. And his Aunt May, Ben's wife, is saying, giving the eulogy, and she says something about, you know, everybody says, like, oh, if I could only have one more moment, if I had one more moment, you know, I would do this or do that. But I wouldn't want one more moment, because then I would just want one more and one more and one more. You know, and that was sad enough. And then later, you know, Peter Parker goes upstairs and she's on the floor and she's crying and she's just saying, you know, I lied. You know, I would give anything for one more moment. And it's like, that's what's so sad about it. You just think, oh, God. And he knows this whole time that he could have provided that. You know, the one thing she would have given anything for, he would have done, he could have done something small and made that happen. But he didn't. So anyway, so I don't know, I think comic books, they resonate with me in a big way. So this is about one called the Inhumans. The Inhumans have these weird powers. This letter was originally about a different Inhuman. There's a guy named Karnak, I believe. He's got a big egg-shaped head. And his sort of power is he can see the weakness in anything. So, you know, I read a book once and basically he could look at this huge building and see cracks running down it, you know, like it was almost like neon to him. So, you know, in the comic book world, this means he could look at a building and basically see one square inch spot where if he karate chops it, the whole building is going to collapse. But, you know, it goes so much further than that. You know, he can, I mean, imagine just seeing everything and seeing its weaknesses, you know. Seeing the worst of everything, basically, the most weak aspects of anything. I mean, it's terrible. So this is about another character named Black Bolt. Dear Inhuman, there's this comic book I read a while ago called The Inhumans about weird mutant guys. Their leader is called Black Bolt. He looks mostly like a normal guy, but he has a voice so strong it can destroy things. If he whispers, he could break apart all the buildings in a whole city. The Inhumans, what the Inhumans say is that he could crack the whole Earth in half if he talked in a normal voice. Black Bolt has to be really careful. Because what if he had a nightmare and said something in his sleep? He might smash someone's house. If something jumped out and scared him and he said something, he could crumble down a building with a really nice deli in the basement. If something hurt him and he said shit, he could explode somebody into dust and they'd be gone. It's hard to be all the way quiet, just for a day. If I don't talk to anyone for a day, I'll start talking to myself, just telling nobody's what I'm doing. Okay, let's get up and take a shower. Okay, let's get on the load of laundry and then we can go turn on the stove. What's even harder than staying quiet is the first word when you start talking. The real kind of people. Talking again. After telling yourself to stop, after sitting so long with your mouth closed, after a long enough time of letting your ideas die before they get to your throat, the first word feels all wrong. It's hard to make words right with your sleepy lips and your tongue draped over your teeth. You can't. Most of the time, my first words when I talk again aren't anything special. It's because someone asks me something and I just say yes or no or fine, thank you. Even then, though, it's scary. Even then, it feels like the world might crack in half. Best, Pete. As many of you know, my grandmother passed away not too long ago, and that was kind of a big event in my life. Yeah. this is getting real weepy, isn't it? But, you know, she had a lot of good things about her that I liked, and I missed her more than I thought I would. And that's a horrible thing to say, maybe, but I don't know. I mean, I think you kind of, I mean, I've been sort of thinking my grandma may die for more than 10 years, you know? So you think that you'd be sort of ready, and then you're not. So there you go. Dear Parliaments, my grandma didn't tell us she smoked all the time, but I found cigarettes in her glove box. Her apartment always smelled like air freshener right when we got there. She has to be on an oxygen machine all the time now. She drags this thin, clear hose behind her all over the house. She got pneumonia a couple times, and then one time it was so bad that she had to be on a ventilator to keep her alive, to move her lungs and her body long enough that she could get better. She was really scared from that. She was scared to die. And then she quit smoking. Grandmas in movies are always ready to die. It's okay for them. And they're in bed or at home. They don't look bad. They breathe for a while and then they tell someone something smart. Or they say where a treasure is buried, if it's that kind of movie. Then they close their eyes, these movie grandmas. Their handsome movie grandsons have to call the grandma's name one last time to make sure she's dead. They die that nice. My grandma was on her ventilator machine when I wasn't there. She couldn't tell me that there's a girl out there I better go after, or where she buried a jar of Confederate bills. I already found the parliaments buried in the glove box of her Ford Escort. I knew about the smoke she buried with spray that was supposed to smell like the air where the Tetons are. Sometimes people die, and it's not like in the movies. They don't have good enough secrets to die nice. Best, Pete. Here's another one. Dear old flame, thank you for the candle you brought over with the wooden wick. I really try hard not to live how people think I live. I like it when people at work are surprised because the chili or the enchiladas I bring in from home smell good. I don't want to live the way a guy all alone is supposed to live. But I never would have thought about buying a candle. They all smell strange and perfumed to me. Or they smell okay in the store, but then it's another story when they're on my desk and on fire. Each one smells a way where you think about the person who buys it. This one is clean and sweet. A lady who doesn't get to her laundry as fast as she'd like. Another one is the smell of flower petals laced with toilet cleanser. A lady who owns an art store and hides her smoking with this candle and blowing her smoke out through the window screen. It took me a while to get used to the smell without you. The smell of cedar and a little bit of brown sugar. A woman who fights with her boyfriend because he won't start. A woman trying to clue him in that she wants to have sex. A woman ran out of words for asking. It's still you whenever I take a match to it. Cedar and brown sugar. A woman who wanted a cupboard full of mismatched plates and who will never ask again. Best, Pete.
Too long. There's an old flame burning in your eyes. The tears can't.
Dear sleepover buddy, there's never been a possum in the wall here. Don't worry. That sound is just the pipes. We have radiant heat. If it's winter and you want your boots to be warm in the morning, I'll put them up on the shelf for you. The pipes go right by there. That thumping water slide sound is just the upstairs neighbor's dishwasher. Nobody's slamming on the front door. I swear she runs that thing every night. Sorry. When I start to get sleepy, sometimes I breathe loud. Not snore, really, just kind of loud breathing. Wake me up and I'll turn away. Don't worry, it's easy to wake me up. Someone before told me that my heartbeat is really hard. I don't notice it, but maybe it's hard. I've never had someone else's, so I don't know how hard it's supposed to be. Don't worry. I'm okay. Wake me up, put your hand on my chest, and I'll turn away. If it sounds like I'm having a nightmare, I probably am. You can wake me up. You can touch my face. You don't have to, though. I'll want to hold on to you for a minute. Don't worry, I'll be okay. In the morning, my neighbor will start his car. It's a loud car. I might say motherfucker. Don't worry, I'll be okay. If you can get through all that, we'll be okay. And there's French toast. Really good French toast. Best, Pete. The secret to good French toast is crusty bread. That's all there is to it. French bread, left out overnight. In the morning, French toast. That's why French toast was invented, friends. And you got this crusty, hard-ass bread. What can you do? Soak it in some eggs and some vanilla. 6 eggs. quarter teaspoon vanilla, quarter cup cream, or half and half, or whatever. Cream is the best, though. Just blend that shit together, put your crusty bread in there, you're good to go. You can trick people into staying over, even if you yell motherfucker because your neighbor has a loud car. Dear Ritzy, when my ex said, I think we should break up, I remember not listening to her anymore and looking at a box of Ritz crackers on the table. They were the hint of salt kind, the kind that is less sodium. I wanted to stop everything and put them away in the cupboard. I don't know what I wanted to be on the table, but it wasn't Ritz crackers in the red box with the little blue ribbon that says how there's not as much salt in this kind. She probably didn't notice that red box, but I did. I kept thinking about how stupid they looked right there in the middle of us being sad, and how it would have looked better if at least they were the regular Ritz crackers. The truth was, one day at work, my chest was sore. I ran to the bathroom to throw up, but nothing came out. I didn't go to the doctor. I don't know what happened, but I was scared, so I decided to eat a little nicer. That was something I didn't want to talk about right then. I just wanted to put that box back in the cabinet. More than anything. Best, Pete. Yeah, that was that. That's like, you know, one of those 100% truers right there. I'll never forget it. I just went to work one morning and, you know, it was kind of, you know, we'd done the sort of breakup, get back together, and this was the second sort of breakup, I guess. And, I was hardly sleeping and I just pushing myself, I guess. And then, there was a time I didn't know what else to do and I couldn't sleep at night. So I would just go to the gym and basically work out until I couldn't anymore. And then hope that my body was so tired that I would just fall asleep. And it didn't work at all. But so I don't know, something with that. And then I was woozy and my chest hurt and I just ran in the bath. I really thought I was going to throw up. I never, other than drinking, I think I've only thrown up from food poisoning once since elementary school. I mean, I threw up like 100 times, but it went one session, you know, 1 2-day period. So it was unusual for me, but yeah, it was scary. You know, so I ate less sodium in my Ritz crackers. This is what a genius I am. So, you know, you're listening to the words of a real smart guy. And I do not endorse any medical advice on this show. This one I just kind of wanted to read out loud. Because, you'll figure it out. Dear Teller, a little bit back, I made a deposit on Happy. This woman from the grocery store told me about it. She said, put things on scraps of paper and then slip the scraps into a piggy bank. She called it her Happy Bank. And she said she called it putting a deposit in the Happy Bank. Or she called it a down payment on Happy. I think I bought too much vegetables that day because it took too long to check out and the grocery store lady talked a lot. But still, I wanted to try. The Happy Bank was too much for me, but a list was a good start. Foods or movies or little things that almost always cheered me up. I put the list away in the top drawer of a file cabinet, for later, in case. When I needed it, I got it out from my desk. It was shorter than I remembered. Everything fit on one yellow post-it square, and my writing is big. None of the things helped right then. How was I supposed to lay hands on good barbecue at that hour? Calling the grocery store lady a cunt while I was still in my apartment helped. Calling her a cunt for giving me this stupid idea. Calling her a cunt and laughing because I got to call her a cunt and when she was trying to help. She was someone's mom, probably, and I was calling her a cunty, cunty, cunthead and laughing at this cunt with her stupid Happy Bank and her deposits into her 401 cunt. When I think about it, when my mouth builds the little cushion of air at the top of my throat to push the word out, it'll still get me laughing. So thanks, cunt. Best, Pete. There you go. So of course, I mean, how could you not read that out loud? You know, you may have noticed on Facebook, there's a guy, R. Leo Olson, who's reading a lot of these and giving me numbers and feedback and stuff, which, you know, this isn't like some ass who's just doing this because it's, you know, whatever. He's a nice man, and we talked about it, and I said that would be infinitely helpful. So if you wanted to do that, I would appreciate it a great deal. You know, and so he gives me good feedback, though. Like, on that one, he said, probably if you build a collection of these, you don't want that one up top, right? Probably got to establish that, you know, I'm not a psychopath. I mean, that, you know, that's probably not going to work as number one. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the record is for having the word cunt in a book, but hey, there you go. That was like 8. Dear Summer Lovin', it's better with me in winter. I promise. I won't be so sweaty all the time, under my arms and all down my back. I won't want to get out of bed right away in the morning. We can stay under the blanket, under the extra blanket that's in the closet right now. But I promise it's heavy and warm and smells of cedar. I won't squint out weird faces every time we go outside. I won't need sunglasses when the clouds are back. You'll see my eyes. You'll see my breath. Just hang in there, please. All these things are waiting in the winter. Best, Pete. Dear 1-800-SEXY-GIRLS, I must have called you and hung up about 100 times when I was a kid. Another kid showed me. Every time there was a payphone after that, I would tap in the number and wait. A woman breathes out slow on the other end. Her voice drips out after the breath. She says, hi. Then she starts talking about sexy girls. Most of the time, I wasn't brave enough to wait until the voice started talking. The breath, then I'd hang up and run away from the payphone. I didn't really know why people were calling. A pretty woman on the phone, but you couldn't see her or touch her or do anything like that, just hear. It seemed like talking was the least important thing for me and sexy girls to do together. I was kind of a dummy. Best, Pete. That was a real phone number. You know, I used to go around, so there was, you know, these running teams and stuff around here, so they would go on these trips, I don't know, like just New Mexico or Grand Junction or something. And I was in the car. Some other kid was riding in the car. We were both listening to our tape players. I don't know what he was listening to on his tape, but I was listening to Ace of Base. I think he was actually also listening to Ace of Base. So as we're doing this, we came to a stop. You know, we went to a gas station. It's like, we'll stretch our legs. And he was like, hey, come check this out. He dials 1-800-SEXY-GIRLS, and I'm thinking, like, what? That's not going to do anything. Totally worked, you know, and this woman comes out, and she's like, hi, you've reached 1-800, you know, and I was like, what the fuck? And I, of course, that time thought that was a real woman, and then we hung up and drove. I thought the cops were going to come swooping in, whoop, whoop, you know, and that was it for us. You know, it was either going to be jail or life on the lam for this 10-year-old boy. Dear lady in my head, when people go out and one of the people is me and one is a girl who isn't married, a whole romance story happens in my head. We have to split up in the cars and she got in my car. The coffee cup rolled out from under the seat at a stoplight. She laughed. Then she reached her hand under and pulled out 2 more coffee cups. She set them in my lap. A joke. The best kind of joke, where her hands touch all over my thighs. We got to the dinner place and she sat next to me. She kind of made a big deal out of it. Rearranged the whole table so her chair was the one next to my chair. When someone said she's just trying to sit next to me, she said, no shit. She said that in the romance story I made. Then we get back in cars and go to somewhere else, but she said she didn't really want to go to the bar and we can just hang out together. Most of the time when I get there, to the real place in real life, the one that's not from my romance story, there's no way. The girl shows up with a boyfriend who I didn't know about, or she gets in another car, or she'll tell everyone she's going to drive herself because she has to go home early anyway. Sometime that night, when I'm driving in the car myself or sitting next to someone who didn't want to sit next to me, sometime in there I think, You need to stop building it up so big in your head. That makes it disappointing. Then the romance story says, but that's the only kind of romance story I get. That's the only time it's perfect. Best, Pete. I guess we all probably do that, right? You know, just, I don't know. Don't we all do that? Have these fantasies? I mean, you know, I guess they usually disperse quickly, which is good. That's probably the, I feel like that's the difference between someone who's crazy and not. It's not having the fantasies. It's how quickly they disperse when you're presented with reality. This has been Therapy Moment with Pete. You know, obviously I'm emotionally stable, so I'm in a good position to tell you these things. Dear Plus One, thanks for being my date to the wedding. Whenever you said, if we ever get married, it wasn't that I didn't like you. I just didn't think I could get married to somebody. Even if we got to where it looked like a good idea, I always thought that standing in front of all those people and saying stuff to each other and kissing and cutting a cake and being in pictures while everyone we liked was watching, it was just too much. I liked you, but it wasn't important to me that everybody else knew about it. Part of you knew, huh? Is that why? Why, when we walked out to the car to get your jacket, you asked me to kiss you before we went back inside? Because you knew I was embarrassed to even kiss in someone else's rented canopy, even when everyone wasn't watching us? Now I kind of get it. It's not supposed to be about whether I can marry somebody and do all that stuff with somebody. It's about if I could do it with you. Best, Pete. Dear Strapped, there was this time we hugged. It was outside, cold. We were standing outside your car. Sometimes it's really hard to tell how long these things are going to last. That time it wasn't. That time it was cold. Your nose was cold on my neck and you started your car already. When I was holding you that night, I had both arms around you and one hand was holding onto your purse strap. It felt solid. Like it could really grip you for a second. Later it hit me that holding your purse strap, how tight I squeezed the leather in my hand, that you couldn't feel that at all. You didn't even know it was happening. You couldn't know because I was holding your purse strap instead of part of you. Best, Pete. Dear Approved, why can't you just find a nice girl? Classic mom line. It's so much easier when the girl isn't nice. If she curses in front of little kids all the time, or you saw her throw trash on the ground, or she said some things about the way you dress. The nice girl is still nice, even after you don't like her anymore. She stays nice all the way to the end, even after. And you start asking yourself why you couldn't just find a mean, bitter girl for once. Best, Pete. A lot of moon stuff here. I've noticed that I'm becoming quite obsessed with the moon. Dear Kaboom, every time there's a moon base in movies, they build it with a button to blow the whole thing up. Or if someone has a really cool car, they put a secret switch in there to explode the whole thing just in case it falls into the wrong hands. Every evil lab, it's like there's an inspector who says they can't build without a big red button that says self-destruct somewhere in easy reach. They always push the button at the right time in the movies. They don't ever push it and then find out it was a false alarm. They don't push it way too late to matter. They never push it because they're feeling a little bored and maybe like they want to try something else. Maybe look for a gig at a new secret lab across the highway that has better equipment and more exciting lab coats. When they push it, it's always the right time. They always know the right time to blow it all up. Best, Pete. It is hard to know. Dear Hank, I sold the acoustic guitar that's been sitting in the closet. I can't say I bought it to play for girls, but selling it is definitely like admitting that I'm done trying to trick girls into thinking I'm cool with bad versions of old country songs. Best, Pete. That's a half-truth. I had an acoustic guitar. I don't know if I bought it, you know, if I fantasized about that or not. I don't think I did, but who knows? I mean, I thought stupider things before. I will think stupider things again. But here's what happened. So I had this, you know, acoustic guitar. It's pretty much a piece of crap. Decided to sell it on Craigslist. You know, fans of this show will possibly remember this. And basically what happened is, you know, I had the most frustrating experience of all time. If you ever sold things on Craigslist, you know, you can sometimes get lucky. I will say this. Hang on, just one second. You know, you sell a bunch of cinder blocks and bricks on Craigslist, it goes great. Couch, great. Guitar, you get some crazy youth pastor who wants to come see the guitar, and then you tell him when you're available, and then he says, like, what about this time that's completely outside the original availability? This happened 3 or 4 times with the same fucking guy. So finally what I did is, in the email string, I took video of myself smashing the guitar in the parking lot of my apartment and throwing it in the dumpster and sent it to him and said, you know, sorry, but the guitar is spoken for. And that was that. Dear Forever Young, whenever I was driving to your house, I would drink a cup of coffee. Didn't matter if it was 10 in the morning or so late that the stoplights were flashing. When they were flashing, I only had to stop 6 times to get to your house. Whatever time it was, I would drink a cup of coffee so I could be awake and feel like I was alive enough for you. Then I would brush my teeth in the car, spit at one of the 6 stops if it was nighttime. You were so young. I wanted to be young too. At least for the first few hours every time I saw you. Best, Pete. This one's for my sister. I got my brothers, and here's my sister. Dear sis, there's part of me that will always think of you as a little girl. It's my fault. I'm not creative enough or clever enough to redraw you from what I knew into what you are now. And I wasn't there to see it happen. I apologize like hell for that. Sitting across from you at that Mexican restaurant, listening to you talk, it changed a little something. There was still some of that little girl there, but I didn't remember the courage from before. Best, Pete. Happy Valentine's Day. Dear maid, don't make the bed when you stay over, okay? You're so tidy. Sometimes there's nothing in my place when I get home to remind me you were there. Best, Pete. Dear Town Bicycle, I didn't tell anyone you left me right away because I knew what would happen. Instead, I tried little projects, installing a new towel bar and buying a cheap garage sale bike to try and fix up. When people find out you're alone, they feel bad for you, and then they say what you should do to get better. One person told me I should date her friend. I'm sure her friend is really nice, but I don't think replacing you with someone else is going to make things okay. Someone else said I should fuck it out of my system. She said those words. I don't really fuck people. It's okay for people to do that. I just don't think I should because those feelings are too hard for me to break apart, fucking and loving. I couldn't fix up that bike, not even a little. It's really hard to fix a bike, especially a bike that was made cheap and has plastic handlebar grips that are molded on the handlebars and stuff like that. I gave up on fixing it, and then I wanted to get rid of it. Everyone kept telling me to put an ad up for it or set it out on the street or something like that. And I had to explain that it was a lot closer to being a pile of parts than a bike, pile of parts of a bike than it was to being a bike. Everyone had ideas about what to do next, but they didn't really know how rickety things were already. Best, Pete. You guys hear those trains in the background? Awful lot of trains tonight, huh? Dear fan, the song Night Swimming used to be my song. Then it was our song. Now it's your song. Just wanted to say, I think that's bullshit. Best, Pete.
street light reveals a picture in reverse.
Dear Analyzer, whenever we said goodbye on the phone or goodnight or whatever we said right before we got off, I always sat and waited for you to hang up. Most times it was long enough that I knew you weren't waiting to hang up the phone. You waited until we finished talking. Until I finished talking most of the time. About work or my dinner or the time the Mars rover drew a penis with balls on Mars and I never got over it. Thank you. Those little parts of seconds before you hung up, they were the whole world. Best, Pete. This next one's about going to the doctor. It's one of those ones that pretty much completely happened. You know, sometimes I don't like to talk about which ones happen and which ones don't. And I know that makes some people crazy. But, you know, that's a choice I made, I guess. And I don't know, sometimes I don't want to paint anyone in a bad light. And if there's always a question, then we don't really know, right? So we can just assume everything's cool. Dear patient, I had to go to the doctor last week for some fluid that wouldn't drain out of my ear. In the exam room, I could hear the doctor in the next room talking to a man. He must have been an older man or had trouble hearing because the doctor was talking really loud and really slow, and I couldn't hear what the man's answers were. The questions were all the same kind. Do you feel less happy? Do you feel like the things that used to make you happy don't make you happy anymore? Do you feel like there are days you don't want to do anything? Have you lost interest in things that you used to enjoy? I could hear the doctor asking all that stuff. I didn't know why the patient was there, but I was scared that maybe he was there because he had fluid in his ear. I was scared the doctor would ask me those things. My hands were sticking to the paper on the exam table. I thought about leaving. I thought about it enough that I stood up and looked at the doorknob. I just wanted to fix my ear, not answer those questions. I couldn't answer those questions. It was a good thing my ear hurt so bad that I could think about that instead of thinking about those questions. The doctor didn't ask me any of that stuff. I guess the other guy had something besides ear fluid. Best, Pete. And doctor's terrifying, right? I don't know, you just don't know what's going to happen, and you're sick, you're vulnerable. You know, I want to go to the doctor when I'm not sick, because then I could, you know, defend myself, I guess. Dear octogenarian, the other day I went walking in the city. I love doing that. You see all sorts of stuff, especially if it's a Tuesday when everyone's at work. This time my stomach hurt, and my legs didn't feel too good either. I tried drinking some water because sometimes I forget to drink enough water, and that wasn't the problem. Thinking about being old, how this is what old feels like, how I won't want to walk around the city anymore because my body hurts too much. It's an easy thing, walking around. Something that anyone should be able to do. On a long enough timeline, there's nothing so small and so simple that it can't be taken away. Best, Pete. Dear Drugged, after being sick so long, I got used to falling asleep from cold medicine. I was taking too much, almost twice the dose. But it worked for me, and since I don't take medicine very often, I figured it was okay. It's been a long time since my body felt so terrible. Every night I woke up covered in sweat, then I'd have to change clothes. When I was changing clothes, I'd start shivering so hard that I was afraid I was going to chatter my teeth to pieces. When I started getting a little better, the cold medicine really helped me sleep. If you took it at 11, you'd for sure be sleeping by midnight. When I started getting almost all the way better, I had to stop taking the cold medicine because that's how it works. You can't take cold medicine forever. It was hard to sleep. My body didn't crave the bed the way it did before. Cold medicine gave me a good reason for going to bed every night. It was like a companion there with me, pulling me towards the bed and reminding me how good it was to be warm and close my eyes, how much I needed that. It took care of me. What I want is something like cold medicine. That's like cold medicine, but for every day. To lay down with me. To make my bed something else besides the place I go to give up today. Best, Pete. Dear poison tester, it's been so long since someone held a wooden spoon, held it out in front with a hand underneath to catch drips, and moved it towards my mouth and said, "Try this. You'll love it." Best, Pete. Dear Palatine, he always used to say, "Pete, there was a real good moon last night." He always used to say, "Did you see it?" And after we were only friends, you still said it to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Best, Pete. Dear Photographed, there's a picture you gave me from when you were a little kid. You remember the one I'm talking about? It's Christmas. You're standing in the living room. With a long Looney Tunes shirt on. You're holding something in your hand, maybe an umbrella, and looking up into the camera with your mouth closed, chin pointed, very serious in a little kid way. It was really good of you to give me that picture. I still look at it sometimes, but not too much, because it kind of hurts to look at. You can't help but think that this little girl will have some really nice times and some really bad ones. She doesn't know about any of that yet. That little girl didn't fight with me late at night over the phone yet, and she didn't get mad at me for making her feel like I forgot about her the minute she left the room yet. It feels terrible knowing what's going to happen to that little girl's heart and how much of it is my fault. Best, Pete. We're getting towards the end here. So to sort of, you know, bookend things, although not entirely. Wanted to read another piece that's not mine. Because, you know, it kind of inspired. What happens in this poem is something that I've always tried to replicate, rip off, because it's incredible. This is from a book called Crush by Richard Sykin. You know, it's a tough one because it's got some weird line breaks and things like that. So it looks very goofy. And if you're not a poetry person, even as someone who enjoys poetry often, I sometimes, you know, pick things up like this and say, "Oh, fuck that." But this one's worth it. And, you know, again, I'll read it so you don't have to worry about it. This one's called Boot Theory. A man walks into a bar and says, "Take my wife, please." So you do. You take her out into the rain and you fall in love with her. And she leaves you and you're desolate. You're on your back in your undershirt, a broken man on an ugly bedspread, staring at the water stains on the ceiling. And you can hear the man in the apartment above you taking off his shoes. You hear the first boot hit the floor and you're looking up, you're waiting, because you thought it would follow. You thought there would be some logic, perhaps, something to pull it all together, but here we are in the weeds again. Here we are in the bowels of the thing. Your world doesn't make sense, and then the second boot falls. And then a third, a fourth, a fifth. A man walks into a bar and says, "Take my wife, please." But you take him instead. You take him home and you make him a cheese sandwich and you try to get his shoes off, but he kicks you and he keeps kicking you. You swallow a bottle of sleeping pills, but they don't work. Boots continue to fall to the floor in the apartment above you. You go to work the next day pretending nothing happened. Your coworkers ask if everything's okay, and you tell them you're just tired. And you're trying to smile, and they're trying to smile. A man walks into a bar, you this time, and says, "Make it a double." A man walks into a bar, you this time, and says, "Walk a mile in my shoes." A man walks into a bar, into a convenience store, then, still you, saying, "I only wanted something simple, something generic." But the clerk tells you to buy something or get out. The man takes his sadness down to the river and throws it in the river, but then he's still left with the river. The man takes his sadness and throws it away, but then he's still left with his hands. So I really dug how I was talking to someone today who said I shouldn't say I dig something. That, you know, I've born 30 years too late for that. Anyway, I enjoyed the sort of turnaround on the joke there. So here we go. Dear Clowner, have you heard the one about divorced Barbie? My dad was one of those dads who told jokes all the time. Not good jokes. Dad jokes. Ones where a cow does something a cow doesn't usually do, or a nonsense word is put to use. Or sometimes a very safe word is used in a cute way to replace a word like penis. One that I heard him tell a lot was about divorce Barbie. It starts in that classic joke way. Did you hear the one about divorce Barbie? That's a really bad setup for a joke. What if someone says yes? And just because someone says no doesn't mean the same thing as, no, I haven't, but I'd like to hear it. His jokes were bad, but that one was really bad. It pretty much ends up where the joke is that Ken and Barbie get a divorce and she takes all of his things. You're supposed to say the ending in a cute way. I don't really feel like doing that right now. It's okay. I mean, there are things that hurt and you have to laugh about them. Maybe he thought that joke was really funny. Maybe it did cheer him up to tell it so much. Maybe it was like a song that gets stuck in your head. So when he thought it was a good time for a joke, that's the one he had ready on his tongue. I don't know that. He probably should have stuck to the one that ended in cute wordplay about vegetables. Best, Pete. There you go. That was one of his big jokes. You know, he would tell this. We'd go skiing, right? So if you've ever been skiing, you kind of queue up and you're waiting in line, and then the chairs come around this big roundabout. So you kind of go and you stand, and the chair just basically hits you in the back of the legs and swoops you away, you know. So what he would do is he always liked to tell these lift operators his jokes. So he starts telling that joke. And, you know, basically he'd say, you heard about that? And they'd always say no. And then he'd say, yeah, you hear about divorced Barbie? No, she comes with all of Ken's stuff as he's getting swept away. You know, and I was like, oh, that's great. That's talking about my mom. Perfect. All right, let's do this. Another one for my grandma. Dear mourner, the doctor said my grandma will die today. Today or tomorrow. I just visited her just a month ago. She lives near Chicago. I visited her for a few days and then stayed in the city a few days. It started snowing that second night in the city. It wasn't too late, but it was quiet because it was winter and it was Tuesday. There wasn't much downtown besides me walking. I walked past a restaurant where a man was working inside sweeping. He pointed at me and then up at the sky. It took me a breath, but he was pointing to say, look, it's snowing. I knew it was snowing, but I liked talking to him through the window. It wasn't scary, like when you have to really talk to someone and you're not ready. It was okay. It was nice. I waved, and he waved, and he got back to sweeping, and I got back to walking. It was probably because my grandma wasn't doing so good, but when I was there, I decided to start paying attention to what made me happy. I don't feel happy much. Not really happy, not for a long time. Walking around with the snow and the streets so quiet, it felt like there was no reason to ever stop walking. It was cold, but the motel where I stayed was really warm, and I knew it would be there when I was ready. The whole city was there, and I could see whichever parts I wanted. There was nobody around that night that might be hoping that I would be a certain way, or that I'd make them happy, or at least be happy myself. It was a whole night where there was just a guy walking down the sidewalk, and maybe he'd talk to someone through the window, and that would be enough. That made me happy. I wanted to write something about my grandma. but the doctor said she's unconscious and probably won't wake up again. My grandma said she's always said she doesn't want a funeral. She already did all the papers to donate her body. She was practical like that. She didn't make a fuss. It makes it hard to say nice things about her because I think maybe that's not what she wants. So I'll say this. Even though I don't have as many happy times as I'd like to, one of the best came right after I saw her, and I needed it. Not 2 years before that, or 2 years before that, I needed it then. I don't think I would have had that happy time if my grandma hadn't held out so long. Best, Pete. That's the end of what I've got for you today. You know, so just a bookend, as we said, I wanted to go ahead and read one last poem here that's not mine. Yeah, I don't want to take credit for someone else's wonderful work. This is a poem that I read at a friend's wedding a couple years ago. It's about, you know, miracles. This is by a poet named Donald Hall. He was married to the poet Jane Kenyon. And she died, you know, way before she should have died. So they both wrote a lot about that. And this is one I just enjoyed. Summer kitchen. In June's high light, she stood at the sink with a glass of wine and listened for the bobolink and crushed garlic in late sunshine. I watched her cooking from my chair. She pressed her lips together, reached for kitchenware, and tasted sauce from her fingertips. "It's ready now. Come on," she said. "You light the candle." We ate and talked and went to bed and slept. It was a miracle. And with that, I wish you all a happy Valentine's Day. You know, I know a lot of people have their feelings about this holiday. I don't know. You know, I have feelings about holidays too, and here's what I've decided. I'm sure I'll decide something else as I age, but for today, consider this. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Christmas, right? Turns out, I like Christmas when I dress up as Santa and get drunk with my friends. And it's crazy and fun. You know, a lot of people don't like Halloween because they're thinking, it's just for people to get drunk and have sex. But I'm telling you, if you go to work dressed as Spider-Man or Rocky Balboa, then you're going to have a good day. I promise you. So like these holidays, you know, you got to decide, hey man, the holiday's coming whether you like it or not, and you cannot stop it. I don't know, decide what you want to make out of it. Do it for yourself. Say to yourself, all right, this is going to come every year for the rest of my life. I might as well figure out a way to goddamn enjoy it already. You know, so for me, it's this. I hope I can, you know, keep doing this in the future and that you guys will still be interested in it. I have so many people to thank, you know, for all the reading and the sharing and the comments and, you know, Leo and Kirsten and Elle and Steve and Rob and Niadi and Aaron and Michelle and Edward and Kevin and Sage and Tom and Starry Feet and Matt and Heather and Val, 1,000 times Val, and Jordan and Mike, who talks comics with me online. This is embarrassing, but I don't remember the kid's name, but there was a kid I talked to also about comics who then told me he was having some lady trouble, you know? So I hope you're doing better out there, my friend. You know, everybody is a big help. Baby boy Watson. Rub that tum-tum. I'll feel better. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. On her shoulders and feet. The bar on Gethsemane Street. She took time to plan her retreat. And always backed out the door.
Well, I guess I'm attracted to those who witness a man in the throes of a life that ain't grindstone nose, but pedal to floor. And she smelled like cigarettes and wine, and she kept me happy all the time. I know that ain't much of a lie, but it's the God's own truth. And she lives down inside of me still, rolled up like a $20 bill. She left me alone with these pills in the last of my youth, lost on the dry side of town. My memory's slowing me down. She shook me and I came around. I came back to life. Marry a mother, dad. She showed me what I never had. Now the princess leaves. Sad, 'cause I won't take a wife. And she smells like cigarettes and wine, and she kept me happy all the time. I know that ain't much of a lie, but it's the God's own truth, ain't it, baby? She lives down inside of me still, rolled up like a $20 bill. She left me alone with these pills and my smoldering youth. She left me alone with these pills and the last of my youth.